This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through his series on the Sermon on the Mount. Now, here's Pastor Sandy with his message entitled, The Value of Your Word.
Well, in chapter 5 and in verse 31, Jesus speaks these words, "Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one." One Thanksgiving Eve, a woman went to the grocery store to purchase a turkey that she would serve the next day. Well, being the night before Thanksgiving, the butcher was down to his very last turkey. He plopped the bird up on the scales, read the scales, it weighed 15 pounds. The lady said, "I'll need more meat than that. Do you have a 19-pound turkey?" Well, he didn't. I mean, that was his very last turkey. And so he took the bird off the scales, he placed the turkey back in the cooler, and then he pulled it out again, pretending it to be a different turkey. He put it up on the scales, this time he weighed it, and as he did, he pressed down on the scales with his two little fingers. So that, guess what? It weighed 19 pounds. Look at that! Just what you needed. Well, the indecisive lady, she sort of scratched her head and she says, "Oh, I'm not sure what I need. Just wrap them both up for me, would you?" Well, our lies have a way of finding us out, don't they? Over 200 years ago, the Scottish poet wrote, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." You see, the problem with lying are the 15 succeeding lies you have to tell to cover up the original one. And even then, the truth still has a way of wiggling its way out. Well, here in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about the value of our word. When we make a promise or when we take a vow, do we follow through? Do we have integrity? How trustworthy are you? How reliable is your word? You know, there was a day in American life when your word was your bond. Business transactions were conducted on a handshake. Folks went out of their way to deliver on what they had promised. But those days are long gone. Today, agreements are made to be broken, it seems. Coaches and business executives, they sign long-term contracts, knowing full well they'll last only until a better offer comes along. Players under contract sit out until their team renegotiates a larger salary or trades them to someone else. Politicians and journalists, they massage the facts, not to give us an accurate picture, but to advance the narrative that serves their purpose. People are concerned with truth only as long as it helps push along their particular agenda. Daniel Webster wrote, "There is nothing as powerful as truth, and often, nothing is strange." I mean, honest people are becoming extinct. They are a vanishing breed. Not too long ago, I found some disturbing statistics in an article I read in Psychology Today magazine. The article said this, 50% of people polled said that if audited by the IRS, they would owe money. 33% admitted to deceiving a friend. 26% would pocket the difference if a clerk gave them too much change. 19% cut in line at grocery stores. 93% violate the speed limit. 89% said scratching the paint on the car next to yours in the parking lot and driving away without leaving a note was dishonest. Yet 52% said that's exactly what they would do. 68% of people said that cheating on your spouse was wrong, yet 42% said they'd do it if the right opportunity presented itself. It reminds me of the man who was backing out of his parking spot. He had been in the mall. He'd been Christmas shopping. And as he was backing out, he smacked the car behind him. A large crowd had heard the crash. Many, many people saw the accident. It was a crowded mall. Well, the man got out of his car. He surveyed the damage. And then he stuck a note on the windshield. All the eyewitnesses were impressed. This, look at that. That's an honest man. Well, a couple hours later, the owner of the car that was hit came out of the mall. He saw the damage. He went to investigate the note. And this is what it read. I just smashed your car. The people who saw the accident are watching me. They think I'm leaving you my name and address. I am not. Good luck. Welcome to our modern world. Truth has taken a hiatus. Today, deception, half-truths, exaggeration, flattery rule the day. Say whatever you need to say to get whatever you say you need. That's how most people roll. And yet, this is not how a Christian should navigate life. Jesus has a better way for us to live. He has a better way for us to relate to each other. He lays it out for us here in the Sermon on the Mount. Trustworthy, honest, truthful, dependable, upright. These are all terms that should characterize a follower of Jesus. Once there was a woman. She was enjoying a day at the beach. She had found a spot. She had stretched out her towel. She was laying there on the beach when all of a sudden a boy, maybe 8 years old, approached her. He asked, "Ma'am, are you a Christian?" The lady said, "Well, yes." He asked again, "Do you go to church?" She says, "As a matter of fact, I do. I try to go every Sunday." Well, the little boy asked a third time. He said, "Do you read your Bible and pray every day?" Well, now she's wondering, why these spiritual questions? I mean, especially from an eight-year-old boy. Well, finally, the little boy revealed his thinking. He asked her, he said, "Ma'am, will you hold my money while I go swimming?" Well, the little boy had the right assumption, didn't he? The one trait that should characterize every Christian is honesty. We should be known as people who value our word. A Christian should say what he means and mean what he says. He or she should have a reputation for honesty and integrity. Remember Proverbs 22, verse 1. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Once the pastor told his congregation that he was assigning them some homework. He wanted them all to go home, and then during the following week, he wanted them to read John chapter 22. Well, when the next Sunday rolled around, the pastor asked for a show of hands. How many of the good church members had read John chapter 22? Well, about three-quarters of the crowd, they raised their hand. How embarrassed they were when the pastor informed them that John's gospel ends with chapter 21. They were all lying in the confines of the church. And I wonder about us. How many times have we lied? Have we been dishonest in church? We refuse to come clean about ourselves and admit the truth. Or maybe we make empty promises to God or to each other. Perhaps we ignore the truth that we claim to seek. You see, this was the issue with the Pharisees of Jesus' day. Judaism also put a premium on truthfulness. In Proverbs chapter 6, King Solomon had listed six things that the Lord hates. And near the top of his list is a lying tongue. The Pharisees claimed to value honesty and integrity. Yet, as usual, they said one thing and did another. They made great promises while looking for loopholes. Jesus addresses these Pharisees here in verse 33. He says, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.'" Under the Old Testament, oaths were a device that promoted honesty. When you took an oath or swore by a third party, you were asking a higher power to hold you accountable, to judge you if you failed to keep your vow or hold up your end of the deal. This reinforced your commitment to the promise. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 16 explains it this way, "For men indeed swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation is for them an end of all dispute." It's like us swearing on a stack of Bibles. The consequences, whatever they are, of mocking a stack of Bibles should hold you to keep your word. Hebrews 6 mentioned that God himself had taken an oath. Of course, God had no one or nothing greater than himself that he could swear by, but God wanted Abraham to know how strongly he was committed to the promise he was making to his people, and so he swore by himself, the scripture tells us. Again, this system of third-party oaths was intended to bolster our respect and commitment for the truth. But as usual, the Pharisees, they twisted the intent or the spirit behind God's law, and they interpreted it in a way that God never intended. You see, the Pharisees made their oaths not to buttress the truth, but to undermine it. They would sucker another party into an agreement with an oath, knowing full well that later on they would use a religious-sounding excuse to nullify their obligation. It was like taking an oath with your fingers crossed behind your back. Rather than promote honesty in God's family, their oaths were a way of bamboozling the brethren. You see, the Pharisees had invented a whole classification system of oaths. Certain oaths were more binding than others. It depended on the stature of the third party you invoked. Notice here in verse 34, Jesus describes their scale in cascading clout. He says, "Neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black." In other words, for big promises, they swore by heaven. Oh, that's God's throne. A person's less likely to violate heaven. For lesser but still important promises, they would swear by the earth. It's not God's throne, but hey, it's still his footstool. For run-of-the-mill promises, they would just invoke Jerusalem. And for flippant promises, oh, just swear by the hairs on your head. But again, the intent of all this oath-making was really getting out of the promise, not upholding it. This is why Jesus loathed their oaths. He hated them. Jesus says in verse 37, "Rather than take an oath, let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." Rather than rely on oaths to form agreements, people should trust us because they know we're true to our word and we keep our promises. We do what we say we'll do. People should know that our yes is yes and that our no is no. That we don't welch on a promise that becomes inconvenient. You see, the Jews relied on sneakiness of speech to coax men into trusting them. How much better for men to know your character, to take you at your word and rely on your integrity. Once it was a businessman, he approached his lawyer. He wanted him to draw up an airtight contract that would protect him from this new partner that he didn't really trust. Well, the smart lawyer, he said, "No words in the English language will take the place of honesty between men. Nothing will protect either of you if you plan to deceive each other." And it's true. Nothing replaces integrity and character. Notice here in verse 34 when Jesus tells us, "But I say to you, do not swear at all." Realize he's not forbidding every formal oath that society might require us to take. In fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 23, we'll find that the Apostle Paul took an oath. In Acts 21, Paul actually participated in a vow, a bigger oath. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 63, even Jesus himself swore under oath to be the Messiah. See, I don't believe that a newly appointed president taking his oath of office or a soldier's vow to serve his country, or a marital vow, or the oath you might take to testify in court, is a violation here of verse 34. Some Christians do. Quakers, for example, they prohibit their members from swearing any kind of formal oath. I don't believe that Jesus is forbidding here for participation in legalities or formalities. In fact, symbolic gestures are important to a culture. For example, when a man and a woman publicly exchange their marriage vows, it isn't just a statement to each other. It's making a statement to the society at large. It's saying something about marriage and about God's intent for husbands and wives. If my wife hadn't been willing to walk the aisle and take an oath, I might have questioned her seriousness. But I don't trust her today just because she mouthed some words to me in an altar many, many years ago. No, I trust her today because I know her to be a woman of character and a woman of integrity. I trust what she says. And Jesus is teaching us here that mere words should never become a substitute for honesty and nobility. That people should trust us to say what we mean and mean what we say. I've heard it said, it's surprising what heights a man may obtain by simply remaining on the level. As the old saying goes, honesty is the best policy. Dr. Madison Sturrott taught mathematics at Vanderbilt University. Before each test, he would say to his class, "Today I am giving two exams, one in trigonometry and the other in honesty. I hope you will pass them both. But if you must fail one, fail trigonometry. There are many good people in the world who can't pass trig, but there are no good people in the world who cannot pass the examination of honesty." And here's where we get tested. How committed are we to honesty and to integrity? How do we behave when nobody but God is watching us? Are we honest to God? It was years ago now, but I'll never forget. We went to the Cracker Barrel for dinner one night. Natalie was just a tot, but she still had strength enough to swing that door open. And when she swung that car door open to get out of the car, she swung it as hard as she could. And bam! The edge of that car dug right into the quarter panel of the car next to us. I mean, it left a gash. It wasn't just a dent. It was a gash. We walked inside. We ordered our dinner. And for the next hour, I was tormented. Should I search for the owner? Should I leave a note? Should I just pretend that it didn't happen? I mean, it was just a dent. No, it was a gash. I was so upset. Not even Cracker Barrel tasted good that night. Well, when it was time to leave, I took a piece of paper, wrote out my contact information, and I stuck it on the car's windshield. I guess I should tell you that I wrote the note in Hebrew, but no. No, not really. No, I wrote the note in English, and I wish I could report that God blessed me. And the owner of the car said, "Oh, thanks for your honesty. No big deal. Let's just pretend it didn't happen." But that's not what the owner said. The lady filed a claim. My insurance went up. It cost me to be honest. You know, it's one thing for us to say that we want to be a person of integrity. But is it still our desire when it costs us something? When it costs us some money? When it costs us some big bucks? Truthfulness can actually get expensive. Do we really believe Proverbs 28, verse 6, "Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one perverse in his ways, though he be rich"? Hey, not all of us will become great missionaries or evangelists, but we all can be a witness for Jesus by being a person of integrity. And for a husband and a wife, guess where that integrity needs to start? In your marriage, with the vow that you have taken toward your spouse. The music of marriage should be played in high fidelity, in perfect purity, and in clarity. Jesus says in verse 31, "Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Now, as the Jewish system of oaths allowed you a way out of your obligation, so did its teaching on divorce. You see, the law of Moses had allowed for divorce on the grounds of uncleanness. Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4 had stated, "When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and then divorces her, or if the latter husband dies who took her to be his wife, then her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife." Now understand, God's law in Deuteronomy, it did three things. First, it turned divorce into a legal proceeding. You see, prior to Deuteronomy 24, all a husband had to do was just send his wife packing. He didn't even owe her bus fare. But now a certificate is involved. There's a legal proceeding that has to be engaged. Second, this law, it established a cooling off period. I mean, the certificate slowed the man down. It made him think it through. No knee-jerk reactions now. The man was forced to think through the implications of his decision in order to go and to get that certificate. And then third, once you divorced your wife, you could never, ever remarry her. That means that if it dawned on you later that the divorce was a mistake, you couldn't rectify it. You had to live with its finality. This, too, caused you to think through the issues. You see, all three aspects of God's law were intended to discourage, not encourage, divorce. God wanted to make divorce more difficult, not easier. Deuteronomy 24 wasn't meant to condone divorce, but to postpone divorce, to prevent it, not permit it, to erase it, not excuse it. It's interesting, in Matthew chapter 19, Jesus was asked to explain this law in Deuteronomy chapter 24. And there Jesus explains it. "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so." The law of Moses made a concession to human hard-heartedness. God knew that because of man's sin, that his heart would get hard, that it would get hard toward the person that he loved the most. And so rather than face a rash of murders and domestic violence, God allowed for divorce. Reminds me of the man who was asked, "When did you discover a certain chemistry in your marriage?" He answered, "Well, when I found arsenic in my cornflakes." Did you hear the man? He was driving along a deserted freeway when all of a sudden a cop stopped him. He informed the driver that his wife had fallen out of the car about a mile or so back up the road. The driver said, "Officer, thanks for letting me know. I thought for a minute there I'd gone deaf." You'll get it later. Let me just say, in 34 years, I've done enough marriage counseling to know that both husbands and wives can suffer from acute hardening of the heart. It is amazing how we can get stone cold toward the person that we once loved so passionately.
What does the Bible say about judging others? What if a person does something that's directly opposed to the truths of the Bible? What about vengeance? Is it okay for me to get back at those who have hurt me? These are only a few questions Pastor Sandy will answer as he teaches through Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, a series that drills down deep into the core of what it means to be a follower of Christ. This has been another edition of Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. He's the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, we're sure that today's message has blessed and encouraged you in your walk with Jesus Christ. Maybe you'd like to review this message again, or perhaps a family member or friend has come to mind today. Log on to sandyadams.org and click on the radio program option in the main menu. There you'll find today's message. All you need to do is remember today's date and log on to sandyadams.org. Or you can give us a call here at the church. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Someone is standing by to take your order. Again, just mention today's date, and we'll send you the full-length CD. Next time, Pastor Sandy will continue with this insightful study on the Sermon on the Mount. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, we want to say thank you for tuning in, and may God bless you.